In the 1970s, James Black settled into New Orleans, leaving occasionally to tour with musicians such as Dr. John. In addition to playing drums, he did gigs on the piano at clubs such as Lou and Charlie's and Tyler's. He was also working with younger musicians and recording some of his own compositions. Drummer Johnny Vodakovich played with him and got to know him at this time.
He was a perfectionist. He would make me do stuff over and over. He'd get up from the piano a couple of times and go say, "No, play this on the drum," you know? And he would play it on the drum and play that. Okay, I said, "All right, James." He'd go back by the piano, play that one or two times, and he'd be comfortable.
The man was a true Renaissance man.
Pianist David Torkanowski did gigs both in the studio and in the clubs with James Black.
Incredible sorcerer of power and time. He knew about classical music. He knew about European music. He knew about African music. And, you know, he just felt like he had to put on this face in front of everybody. You know, tough guy. But he wasn't really about that. Nobody saw the sensitive side unless you really got to know him.
He'd want the music to be really happening.
Johnny Vodakovich.
He was anxious and high strung. His tachometer ran high. Yes, the metabolism of getting into the music was of high rev. I think people's interpretation of his so-called arrogance or his so-called impoliteness was due, I think, a lot because sometimes he was surrounded by a lot of individuals who were not as into it as much as him, and I think that really got his goat when the dude just didn't really put his all into it.
Black's seriousness toward his music was evident in his live performances. Trumpeter Clyde Kerr Jr. speaks of one engagement in Black's band.
He was pushing so hard, man. So after we were standing outside the street, I'm saying, "Man, why are you playing so hard behind me?" You know, just being ignorant, not really know. I said, "Man, why are you pushing so hard?" I said, "Man, I'm a drummer. That's what I'm supposed to do." So I thought about that and said, "Oh, okay, yeah, all right."
Drummer and curator of the Hogan Jazz Archive, Dr. Bruce Rayburn, saw Black play many times in the 70s and 80s.
People who write jazz history textbooks talk about the 70s as the era of jazz rock fusion, as though that were the dominant paradigm. Far from it. What was going on in the 1970s was all sorts of experimentation, and James Black is one of the best examples of that. Right here in New Orleans, man, the guy was creating state-of-the-art music in jazz, was pushing boundaries and frontiers every way he could. You know, he was not your everyday jazz journeyman drummer. This guy was really different and really intense and really vital and powerful in his ideas and his thinking and even his philosophy. But he also had all the New Orleans attributes. He played for the band. He did music for all occasions. He was very broad. He was eclectic in terms of the kind of things he pulled on for his ideas.
Harold Batiste.
The thing I think that distinguished him in our minds at that time was the fact the way he used the meters. He changed meters and he did things in 5/4, and then he mixed the meters in 5/4 to 3/4. And the way he mixed meters so masterfully until it never felt that it was forced, like we're trying to play in 5/4, you know, it was just a natural thing. And I guess secondly, I was always amazed at his harmonic progressions, the way he chose to move through the melodies he created. They were all fresh.
Branford Marcellus did several gigs with James Black while he was coming up in New Orleans.
He just wouldn't take no stuff off of nobody.
And if you were messing up, he was going to shout at you.
He was a brilliant musician, and he knew what he wanted. And he knew a lot of music. And his songs were hard as hell to play. What do you mean, how they're hard to play? That's like, you know, 210 pounds is heavy to lift.
Clyde Kerr Jr.
He had a low tolerance for foolishness for when it came to the music. Many times when he was playing gigs with cats and maybe the piano player was playing wrong changes, so he started calling out the changes, you know, on the bandstand. That would get him frustrated too.
One of the first times saxophonist Tony DeGrotti met Black was at a gig.
I asked James if I could sit in, and I guess he said yes because I got my horn out and started to play, and so they played something like, I think it was Impressions or a tune like that, and everybody soloed, they played the head. As soon as it was my turn to play, James stopped playing. You know, kind of just left me hanging in space. I guess that was my first test with him, and I definitely enjoyed the experience. For me, it was stimulating and a challenge at the same time. He definitely challenged who ever he played with. you know, challenged you to play well and challenged you to play with him. You know, some people would be afraid to play with him, you know, because he was intimidating.
He was a very articulate speaker.
Bassist James Singleton got to know Black playing with him in the 70s and 80s.
And intensely humorous, highly emotional, and very much loved a party. He loved to laugh. He had an intense sense of irony and great wit and sarcastic sense of humor and an explosive verbal style, which matched his drumming. He's one of those guys who speaks and talks the way he plays music. You know, it's just this very dynamic flow of ideas.
Guitarist Steve Mazakowski both hired and was hired by Black to perform on gigs.
To me, there were two James Blacks. There was the James Black that would hire you for his gigs, and then there was the James Black that you would hire for your gigs. And they were two different people. Well, usually when he hired you, everything went fine and everything was very predictable and the gig went really, really great. But when you hired him for a gig, you know, it was like totally unpredictable. You didn't know whether he was going to show up for the gig. You didn't know what he was going to do on the gig. We had a funny little outstanding joke among the musicians. We used to say, you know, when we had to try to call a drummer for a gig, we'd go down our list and we keep scratching names off, you know, when people couldn't make it. And then finally we'd get down to the best drummer in town. It was just James Black, and we wanted to call him for the gig. So I couldn't find anybody else. I had to hire the best drummer in town.
Johnny Vodakovich.
And sometimes he would do the same thing musically. He would sabotage your situation, I call it. Sabotage your moment. There was definitely an air of mischievousness in his personality. And if, whether it could be in a social situation or if he could rock the boat while you're playing music and keep it a joke, he would do that.
Bassist Chris Severin knew Black before they started playing together.
James Black seems to be a real smooth, slick kind of guy. Very street knowledgeable. You know, he had the street thing, but he was also intellectual, which a lot of people didn't know until they took him there in terms of conversation, and they found out, hey, this cat is just not a regular cat. He can function on both sides.
Writer and producer Kalamu Yasalam also saw Black with that perspective.
There's a whole level of brutal honesty that happens among people who frequent the streets as their favorite place to hang out. And when I say the streets, I don't mean that figuratively, I mean literally. People who just spend most of their time walking up and down the streets, hanging on a corner or something like that. They have a whole different way of expressing themselves. There are very few euphemisms. There's not much room for sentimentality. They've seen all kinds of stuff go down.
Clyde Kerr Jr.
He always wanted to give off this macho kind of thing, too, for whatever reason. I really think that was, like, when people do that sometimes, it's really trying to hide their vulnerability to keep from getting ripped off, get paid, and or whatever. That's unfortunate. But all that made him who he was.
Sister Mary Bonette.
He had a bad temper, yes. But he had a very, very tender heart. He had a very good heart. A lot of people didn't see that side of him. I mean, I've seen him cry. He's told me a lot of things from his soul. He couldn't have wrote the music he wrote, the beautiful music he wrote, if he didn't have the tenderness in his heart.
Bassist James Hutch Hutchinson learned a lot playing with James Black in New Orleans before going on to play in Bonnie Raitt's band.
He was a very giving person. I mean, maybe not in a financial sense, but definitely as far as support goes and passing things on to younger players. I know he had a number of students he taught at his mom's house.
He taught us all a great, higher understanding of what the drums can sound like.
Johnny Vodakovich.
He surely did for me. He taught me I could sit down behind the drums and be a composer, that the drum set was as big as an orchestra. You know, you could do everything from the smallest sound to the largest, ferocious, rude sound, and you could make beautiful sounds out of drums. And you can play them in a musical way that's definitely related exactly in a compositional context to what's going on musically like that at the moment.